writing now appears at the Gray Zone?
Correct. That's right. And I will, in fact, be writing a piece on this subject in the coming days.
All right. Incredibly important subject. Any final things we should know about you wanted to share with us that are important to understand more about this particular story and the bigger dangers?
Well, I would just underline the fact that the FBI is operating here in a way that is expressing a lack of the most minimum respect for freedom of opinion. I mean, they're using criteria here which would be admired by the most authoritarian government in the world, because that's the kind of reasoning that is used all over the world to do precisely this kind of thing, to suppress opinions that they don't like.
And that does it again for today's episode of Flashpoints. See you tomorrow. Listening to KBOO Portland.
Hey, KBOO supporters. Tomorrow is another big give day for Willamette Week's Give Guide, so get ready. When you donate $50 or more to KBOO or any of the 174 other participating organizations on Give Guide, you'll be rewarded with a thank you from A to Z Wineworks. With a donation of $50 or more, you could receive A to Z Rosé Bubbles, Pinot Noir, or even a screen-printed magnum of A to Z Oregon Pinot Noir. Plus, one lucky donor will win a case of A to Z Wineworks Pinot Noir. See details for each gift's minimum eligibility at kboo.fm/give. Donors must be 21 or older to be eligible for all A to Z Wineworks offers. These offers are for your total donated amount throughout tomorrow, so spread your donations across as many organizations as you'd like. Take advantage of this A to Z Wineworks offer during Give Guide's Big Give Day, tomorrow, Thursday, November 12th. For more information about this offer and supporting KBOO through Give Guide, visit kboo.fm/give.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Well, good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now with Jim Gilbert across from me, 6 feet away at least, and our recording engineer, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions. He's also 6 feet away, and we are recording this Dirtbag a couple of days before the playing of it on Wednesday, November 11th, and several days after a president-elect has been.
Yay!
And as you might expect, some of our, actually all of the musical selections today deal with that.
It's so exciting to be here with you, Glenn and Joel, because we've done this show remotely for way, way too long. At least we're together. Yeah. Sadly, we can't be with our listeners, but we're together, so it's just wonderful.
And furthermore, I should say that we are not recording this at the KBOO studios, but elsewhere.
Yeah,
just because they haven't opened up yet.
Well, we're at One Green World, and they've
that's right.
Graciously offered the use of their house here at the nursery to allow us to make this recording.
Very kind of them to do so, and kind for Joe to be here and with all of his equipment to make it sound as good as Jim and I can sound. You know, right there, that's right off the bat, that reminds me of what has been annoying me this month. Actually, it's been annoying me for some time, but I have noticed this, and I am no expert on grammar at all, and we've talked about this in the past, and many of you have heard what annoys me has to do with grammar. And I could have said, and this is what I hear a lot these days, is when I said Jim and I are doing this, many people would say Jim and myself are doing this. Joe gives me the thumb up. He says, yes, he's hearing that too. And that would not be grammatically correct. Now, the experts or the pundits would say grammar evolves. But and certainly there's a lot of words that are in our lexicon now that weren't and that now are, and they're just accepted. But still, that's what annoys me. So generally you would use myself when you're referring to yourself, but you've already used I in the sentence. So I cut myself, for example.
I myself am annoyed by the use of myself instead of I.
Yeah, something of that nature there. But anyway, we're going to be looking here on which email you can use to pose your questions to us. And once we get that email straightened out, we will also get back to the garden stumper and the prize.
And since we're talking about such things for just a moment, I'd like to mention there's nothing related to plants, of course, but I would like all of the web designers out there to darken up their type in their copy on their websites, because my eyes aren't so great, and I suspect other people probably struggle to try to read them. With a nice faint type is maybe stylish, but it's not useful and doesn't get the message through.
Which is a big part of the reason for having websites. If you get a message across.
That's right.
Yeah, and if you can't read it,
yep,
you failed. All right. Well, there's, you know, we sound like a bunch of grumpy old men here.
That's right. Let's go on to something more fun.
Okay. Gardening in the cold.
Yes.
Oh, well, okay, that's not so fun. But anyway, let me give you a rundown of our show today. We've got, rather than our regular plant of the month, this could be a good one. This is plants to avoid forever. Not just for the month. No, not forever. You just have to take special precautions on these, because if you don't, you'll pay a price. So that will be coming up here just in a few seconds. We'll also talk about what we've been doing in the garden and what you can be doing in the garden, because there's still time. You know, here it is just early November. So plenty of tasks that can be done. And there's still things being harvested. In fact, Jim brought... what'd you bring for us to sample during the break?
I brought persimmons and pineapple guava or feijoa.
Okay, both of those that we will be snacking on.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when Tammy, we used to have a little snack test? Tammy would come in, our engineer.
Oh, yes, right.
And we would have our taste them, and boy, those are good.
Of course.
But now we have Joe.
That's
and
right.
Joe's going to sample along with us, too. And then let's see, speaking of persimmon, Jim has been doing a lot of work with persimmon now, and also flowering quince. So we'll spend some time there. And also we have some from news from Home Orchard Society.
Yes.
We'll put it there. So first of all, what plants that to plant with precaution, let's put it that way, rather than avoiding. I've just been dealing with mint in a garden bed, two garden beds. It's come through the fence into my property. And I've just been battling it for years. And I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to get rid of all of it, other than just keep pulling and keep pulling. But it just spreads underground, so you can't really see where it's going. And Jim, you have any ideas on best way to take care of it?
I have mint growing behind my house that was left to me by the previous owners. That's 30 some years ago, and it's a pain. I prune it. My hands. It's not a real nice mint either. There's different kinds, and this one doesn't even smell particularly good. I mean, if it was like something, you know, maybe like aftershave, maybe I could handle it. But this is like sort of stinks, and I got to keep pruning it. So
this is peppermint, I think, and we use it culinarily. But it's just insidious, and you know, it's taken over a big area, and I've spent a lot of time digging down into the dirt and pulling up the roots of it, and we'll see.
Yeah. You know, if you can find something, you know, if you've got some way of putting a barrier around it, you could do something like cut the bottom out of a plastic pot, a large plastic pot, and put it in the ground and then plant the mint in the pot and let it, you know, where it can't escape.
So you don't think that it would go through the bottom and then out?
If it's deep enough, it won't. No, I mean, if you had, a 5-gallon pot, I'm sure it wouldn't go down below that.
Okay. Yeah, because when I notice these roots, they're pretty, you know, they're within 6-8 inches of the surface. But it's kind of nice soil, too, and there's no reason to go down.
Yeah, it's lower. A shallow-rooted plant, from my experience.
So. Yeah, okay. Well, that's the kind of the probably what we should use for all of these plants that we're going to mention. A couple of other edible plants that we talked about this morning was the O-Currant that they'll send runners out, and they're tough. Tough to pull up. Mint's relatively easy that I've found, but current roots are a little more fibrous, we'll say. They don't send out nearly as much, but still I've been dealing with it. And the other, apparently Seaberry can have some spreading issues too. Another plant that will grow into the middle of a lawn is the Triple Crown Blackberry. That's been my experience. I mean, it'll come up in the middle of a lawn. Oh, I've had it come up probably 10 feet away, just in the lawn. And, of course, a lawnmower, you know, gets it every time.
Right.
And so then it doesn't, you know, get big. But, and I would not plant. The only one that I would not plant that we've talked about is mint.
Yeah.
I'd say just keep it in a pot and don't, you know, just keep it on your deck or wherever. Well, another one that I'll mention here maybe as we close up this segment is Alströmeria or Peruvian lily. And not all of the shades are this way. I've grown the pink Peruvian lily that's behaved itself for at least 2 decades. Just a small patch underneath a plum tree. And, maybe 15 years ago was at a plant exchange. Oh, don't get me started on that. Somebody had some yellow. I thought, well, that'd be a nice addition, and planted it. And if I had let it, it would have taken over not only the pink, but spread beyond the bed. So, you know, plant exchanges are things to be very careful of in that, because people don't give away plants that are hard to propagate or that don't propagate on their own. Just by its very nature.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting thinking about this, Glenn, is that how a plant in one area might be a weed, in another area it might be of benefit. And that comes to mind is Passiflora incarnata, also known as maypop.
I'm not familiar with that.
A beautiful perennial passion flower that we can grow here in the Northwest, quite hardy, bears fruit, really nice plant. For us, it's a wonderful plant. If you live in Florida, it's a weed. And so you also need to know your region and what can happen there.
Well, these are things to keep in mind then, dear listeners, when you're planning your garden for next year.
And we'll get to talk about things that don't do this.
Yeah. That's all we've talked about, isn't it, this show?
That's right.
Right. Well, anyway, I guess it's time to move on. We'll move on to our first music selection here, and this all has to do with the election and in fact how we didn't know right away. So the first selection is from World Party. I've played some World Party in the past. In fact, they're the ones that sing our theme song for the Garden Stumper. Don't know who, don't know why, don't know what.
Oh, cool.
That's World Party. But anyway, this particular song is called Waiting Such a Long, Long Time, which, of course, what we did.
I've been waiting such a long, long time for someone just like you. I've been trying to clear my mind, so tell me what to do. And I don't even know what I want.
such a long, long time.
This is a coordinated monthly test of the emergency alert system through broadcast stations in the greater Portland-Vancouver area, including Clackamas, Columbia, Multnomah, and Washington counties in Oregon, and Clark County in Washington. With the cooperation of public safety broadcasters and cable operators, this system informs you of events that pose an immediate threat to your life, health, or property. If this had been an actual emergency, official information would have followed the alert tone. This test was originated by Clackamas County in Oregon. This concludes this test message.
Particularly New Zealand by that name, is probably one of the most beautiful evergreen shrubs that we can grow here in Oregon. And we're really lucky that we can grow this plant because it has striking flowers, which have edible petals, by the way, sweet edible petals. And then the fruit is just knocks your socks off. I think it's wonderful fruit. And it ripens here. I mean, some places, you know, we're kind of on the northern edge for fruits like this. And some varieties don't ripen here, but we have some really good ones that do. And I think that this plant, I've been growing it for many years, but it should be grown in every yard. It's easy to grow. There's no pest problems. It's drought resistant. Just a really, really nice plant.
Yeah. Is it deciduous?
No, evergreen.
Yeah, so that's another, I mean, you could grow it in place of a lot of things.
Yeah,
I have rhododendrons even. Get rid of your rhodies and put, hey, that's
you
not
could
a bad
have
idea
an
for me, too.
An evergreen edible shrub, you know,
right.
A whole bunch of, you could do a hedge of them.
Does it take well to shearing?
Yeah.
Like a for a hedge?
You can do it like a hedge, yeah.
You just keep it contained.
Like some sun. I mean, it doesn't want to grow in shade, so you want to put it in a place where you get some reasonable amount of sun. But it really is, like I said, it's very easy to grow. We've been doing it for a long, long time.
Yeah.
We got our first pineapple guavas from New Zealand probably in 1983. And they're still alive and are growing and fruiting in our yard. If you don't prune them, they can get up to 10 feet tall, but it takes a long time to get there. And pruning is easy to do and can keep them down to 6 feet or less.
Yeah.
But really, a really good plant, a really nice plant. And we have some new varieties that we will be introducing probably through One Green World and other nurseries here pretty soon, this coming year even.
Well, one of the became clear to me this year is that there's a lot of fruits that, from July, August, September, and even October, but there are fewer fruits now, for the next couple of months. And
right.
So anything that you can do, I've been eating some Fuji apples that are, I don't think they're still perfectly, or they're still not ripe on this tree that I've been getting them from. So it's just a good time to have apples because all the other ones that I grow are done and have been done. But, having a late producer is great.
Yeah. Yeah. We have one called Gold Rush that we've grown for a number of years that's really good late apple.
That's still late.
About. I should also mention about pineapple guava. I like to use the word feijoa because we're probably going to try to use that more often.
Say it slowly. Feijoa.
Feijoa. F-E-I-J-O-A.
Joa.
Joa. The Latin name of pineapple guava is Acca celoiena, but it used to be feijoa.
Oh.
Celoiena. It got changed by people smarter than me, but the New Zealanders call it feijoa, and also in Brazil where it's native. And we went to Brazil in 2015 to go visit pineapple guavas in their native range, and it's interesting because their climate is harder on the plant than ours is.
Uh-huh.
And they have a lot more. They have more pest problems, more disease problems. It's a humid climate. Here they grow the feijoa. Grows happier than it does in Brazil.
Feijoa.
And New Zealand is the word. They've done the most work with it there. And everybody in New Zealand knows this plant and fruit. I mean, in the fall, markets are just full of it. And here, we used to be able to get it. They grew it in California to some degree, but back in the 80s. But now, you don't find it in markets at all.
Okay. Feijoa.
Feijoa.
Also known as
pineapple guava. Very good.
Formerly known as pineapple guava.
Right.
Okay. Well, then let's move on to some of the tasks that we've been doing in our gardens, or that you could do in your gardens too. Jim, you've been doing cleanup and planting and...
Yeah, this is the time of year to do cleanup. And we have done, we are doing planting too. And a wonderful thing about Western Oregon is that we can plant in Washington, the Northwest, we can plant just about any time of year. And fall planting has a lot of benefits to it. If it's plants that can handle a winter, I mean, you wouldn't plant something like your oranges out in the ground right now or anything, but you never would plant
them. They've got to be hardy, yeah.
Yeah, they got to be hardy. But if you plant in the fall, the plant, it gets a chance to build a root system before spring. And we'll grow more vigorously and take off faster than if you plant in the spring. So if you can get the plants, this is a good time to put them in the ground.
Well, I don't think I've ever done this before, but not an edible plant, but with my dahlias, I dig them, maybe half the time I dig some and so I can split them and plant them elsewhere. But most of the time I just leave them in the ground. Unless we have a very, very cold winter, they'll survive. And it's not, to me, it's not worth the hassle to dig them and to store them without the and there's not much chance that they're going to die in the ground. So it's just a lot easier to leave them there. But anyway, I did dig some and divide them. One particular variety called Poo. And it was a big clump, and it filled a 5-gallon bucket. I mean, there was that much in one clump.
Wow.
And so I saved those to plant elsewhere and then replanted one of that variety. And I did that about a half a dozen times. So I'm hoping that, like you said, Jim, that the weather will be decent enough. The ground is still warm enough, and the rain, it's not going to rot that tuber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Well,
and before I move on to what you wanted to say, Jim, one more thing on the dahlias, and the reason that I wanted to dig now is because I'm going to need several dozen or, you know, three or four dozen dahlias to plant a big garden bed. I like growing dahlias. They're great for bees in the late winter and, the late fall. Mm-hmm. Well, early fall too. And so I have just needed some, but I've been just disappointed that I spend so much time staking and tying up these dahlias because they get tall and they flop over. So I did some research just yesterday and found that, lo and behold, I'm not the only one that's had this problem, but somebody else has already solved this problem, and apparently it's very common. It's a product called, what's it called? Hortonova? Are you familiar with that, Jim?
No.
It's a plastic material, kind of like temporary fencing, orange,
sure.
But it's very small, you know, string size.
Huh.
But it's maybe 6-inch squares that you would mount maybe two levels, one at, 15 inches and another at 3 feet. And with these 6-inch squares, the flower stalks can grow through them, of course, and then they're protected because it's just a 6-inch square. So you're making, you stake this floral netting, if you will, on posts, you know, maybe T posts or angle posts or whatever. Could be wood posts, staple it. Very light material, and it's relatively inexpensive. You can get 300 feet for $50. It's 4-inch wide or 4 feet wide or 6 feet wide. So, you know, I look forward to trying that and having a bed of dahlias that just don't
fall over.
Right.
So you put this over the bed, over the plants,
on top of it.
On top,
yeah. So they grow up through it.
Got it.
It would be like having cattle fencing or some other type of fencing,
sure.
But horizontal at a 15-inch level and a 40 inches or whatever.
Yeah.
In just whatever you, however tall you're.
Well, that's interesting.
Because my dahlias look good and good. And then we had this big wind and rain. You know, they have half of them fall over.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I try tying them up ahead of time, but it just takes a lot of time. So,
yeah. Yeah.
That's what I'm going to try this next.
Yeah. I was going to mention, Glenn, another thing to be thinking about this time of year, and I probably mention this every year that we do, that we've done the show, is cold weather and plants in pots. I think it's really important to recognize that when you have a plant sitting in a pot on a deck, for example, the air temperature around it can get so cold that it could freeze the roots, which is pretty dangerous for most plants.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a plant in that situation, it's probably, you know, one way to at least keep it fairly well protected is put it on soil. So the natural heat from the ground will come up into the pot and it will protect somewhat. If it gets super, super cold, then surrounding the plant with an old sleeping bag or some kind of insulating material would be important.
You could also add straw, making sure that the straw is as weed-free as possible. You don't want to be putting in straw that has a reservoir of seeds, because you'll just have a green carpet then. At that point. So generally what I recommend is just leaving a bale of straw out for any 4 months of the year in the weather. And if there's any seeds in it, they'll germinate, and you'll know ahead of time.
Something to be, I don't like to be worried about things, but several years ago, I learned about a bad herbicide that's used in some of the fields where they grow grass seed and where they harvest straw. And I can't remember the name of it, but it's a persistent herbicide. In fact, I think they were even feeding it to horses. This is why they were feeding the straw to horses, and it wouldn't break down in the horse's gut. And when
right.
and there was actual danger of using it in your garden.
Yeah, that chlora something.
I'll see if I can find out.
Yeah, and there was
another
was another run of that this year.
Really?
I know that because Ted at the Coley Farm Store had some soil issues, soil that he bought. Let's talk about our Dirtbag Dictionary term here, about what we mean by fixing nitrogen, and then we'll take our second musical break in our journey in the last week of electing a new president. In that, generally, we would plant the way that we can mostly fix nitrogen for our home gardens is to plant a cover crop that is a legume, which does this, what we call fixes nitrogen. And it's a pretty simple concept in that I'll start very simply by saying that, well, why do we need nitrogen in the soil if close to 80% of the air that we are breathing right now is nitrogen? Duh, can't they?
Right.
There's a lot of nitrogen there. Why don't they use it? Those
grab
lazy.
It out of the air.
Yeah, right.
You know, what's wrong with you plants?
Yeah. Well, nitrogen in the air is a nitrogen in a form that the plants can't use. So they need help of, so to speak, converting this nitrogen into just elemental nitrogen into many of the forms of nitrogen that plants can use. So NH3 and NH4, you know, ammonia, nitrates, nitrites, these are all forms of nitrogen that plants can take up. In fact, the man-made fertilizer is what they do is they take a natural gas or petroleum and convert it with heat and other chemicals into nitrogen or urea that the plant can use. It's in the nitrogen is now in a form that you can use. But what if you're a organic gardener and you don't want to use synthetic fertilizers? Well, your best and it's really cheap bet and way to get nitrogen in the soil is to plant a legume, which with the help of certain bacteria that grow around the roots in the soil, of course, can convert this elemental nitrogen into these other forms of nitrogen that plants can use. So when you pull up a plant, for example, crimson clover or any of the vetches or fava beans, you pull up and look at the roots, you'll see these little nodules on the roots, which are those nitrogen nodules that have in fact been fixed, so to speak, there by these certain bacteria that work in conjunction with them. Now, there's other plants that will fix nitrogen. For example, alder trees. That's a nitrogen-fixing plant. But you'd be advised strongly not to plant alder trees in your garden to get nitrogen. Right. And there's others, too, that I can't recall right now.
Well, seaberry fixes nitrogen.
Okay.
You know, it's not a cover crop, but it does It does improve the soil, which is pretty neat.
Right. And with most of these, and I don't know about seaberry, but I would hazard a guess that even though they fix nitrogen, they can't use that nitrogen themselves.
Yeah.
It has to be sloughed off, you know, into the soil when the plant dies or something like that.
Right. The roots die and it releases some. They don't really need nitrogen. I mean, seaberry is very happy without. You say it grows in sand, so it's
a good point.
You know,
yeah. So anyway, that's a pretty simple concept. When we say fixing nitrogen, it means that it's just adding nitrogen to the soil. And once again, it's too late to plant those cover crops this year. But this is something for you to ponder. Then, I need to get involved with that in time for next year.
It really, we did a soil test a year ago, and we discovered that some of our fields didn't have enough organic matter in them. We just not to what we wanted. And so we're in a big program of planting cover crop in both, you know, winter and summer. And so what our latest cover crop is actually triticale, which is a cross of rye and wheat mixed with vetch. And rye and vetch is another really good cover crop for the winter. Because the vetch will grow up onto the rye, hold it up
as
a vine, and then you get all that organic matter from the rye, which grows very vigorously. So it's if you've got the room to do it, I highly recommend that as a winter cover crop.
Yeah.
It's too late this year, sadly.
Well, for just a regular garden bed, you know, there's lots of options.
Yeah.
But the ones that are nitrogen fixers, and that's most of them, but not the biggest one is probably rye, and it's not the biggest or the most used maybe is rye. Okay, well, let's move on now to our musical journey. We've got Brian Auger's recording of a Gene McDaniels song, very well known compared to what, and he's talking about the president in this case here, but it's just a good song. Once again, kind of old too, but this is from Brian Auger's Oblivion Express from the early 70s, but still true, and the album is called Closer to It. So I was picking these songs as he was getting closer to winning. So
great.
Take a listen.
We'll be right back.
Is Brian Auger's rendition of Compared to What? Hang it up, the gosh darn nation. That's not what he says. Okay, well, this is the Dirtbag, Glenn Andreessen here with Jim Gilbert and our recording engineer, Joe Wilson, Bergman Productions. Is that out of, you're in Milwaukee? Tigard, excuse me. And we are recording this a couple of days before its scheduled air date at the One Green World headquarters. That's here, right. In Southeast Portland. Yeah.
Graciously allowed us to do it here.
Yep. Well, Jim, you've been working with, you talked about the leaves going off the persimmon, but you've also been working with flowering quince.
Yeah, and
this time of year,
we've got a couple really, three really interesting projects that we've done late fall. First, the persimmon. We already talked about pineapple guava or feijoa, but there's a little more to that too. But for the persimmon, we like with feijoa and some other fruits, we're sort of on the northern edge of where these things grow successfully. Persimmons typically grow in 35 degree latitude areas in south and all over Asia and places that are quite warm and have warm evenings. And as many of us know, here in Oregon, the western side of Oregon, we have nice summer days, but our evenings are typically cool. At our place, it can get down to 50 degrees Fahrenheit at night. It's not uncommon during
the summer.
Yeah. So ripening of things, so you have to have early ripening varieties of persimmon, for example, to be successful. So we've been experimenting with these for years, and persimmon is one of my very favorite fruits because I think it's the most beautiful fruiting tree that you can plant, personally. I mean, it's because it has so many neat attributes. Fall color is outstanding.
Except for this year.
Except for this year at our place. The tree is not too big. After the leaves fall, the bright orange fruit hangs on for a long time in the late fall. It's just a striking sight and a really, really nice, easy to grow tree here. So in our efforts to find new varieties that will ripen here successfully, we've planted out, well, I imagine maybe 50 or 60 varieties from all over the world, which we brought in over many years. And this year we did our first major evaluation of a lot of them. I could show you a photograph. I took one of a table, two tables that my partner Lorraine set up with all of these different varieties out on the table.
Well, Jim, send that to me and I'll put it on the website.
Okay, sure. I'd love to do it.
But do it today because I'm going to...
Okay, when I get home.
Get the blurb going.
Sure. Okay. So it was really fun. And we tasted, as many people probably know, there are two kinds of persimmons, basic kinds. One that you can eat firm like an apple, and the other has to be soft. And we call them sweet firm and sweet soft. Uh-huh. And the other name for it is astringent and non-astringent, which I don't like those names anymore. So sweet firm ones are like the Fuyu types. And that's one we have here for sampling. You can eat it firm, like an apple. It's sweet, a nice fruit, very very attractive and all.
In appearance, it's flatter
typically.
Right. Okay. Yes. And this is a good way for you when you're out walking around your neighborhoods.
Right.
Because you'll start noticing orange persimmon now.
Yeah.
And oftentimes birds in the tree.
Yeah, you'll notice the birds will notice it too. And yes. Hopefully you'll notice before the birds do. But no, normally the birds don't like the firm ones because they want them when they're soft. And so they wait for a while typically. So at any rate, we have the sweet firm and the sweet soft. And we've sampled a bunch of the sweet firm ones. And that was exciting and interesting. And now we are sampling the sweet soft ones. Discovering a couple of new varieties that we just hadn't had before. And again, the main criteria is ripening. I mean, they've got to ripen here in this climate, yeah. And our place is a good test spot for it. So if we can do it, you can do it. That's I'm speaking to all of our wonderful listeners on the west side of the Cascades. The Asian persimmon is not super hardy, so you on the east side, it'd be more challenging. It's hardy to about 0 degrees Fahrenheit. So that was our big persimmon story right now, is all this evaluation we're doing and testing of these new varieties. We talked about feijoa and pineapple guava, and what we're doing with it is sort of the same thing. We have a lot of varieties that we've brought in from New Zealand over the years. We're pretty excited about them, and some of these new ones that we just sampled here, one we sampled here today, is very, very large, very unusual compared to what's been available over the past several years, past many years. So that's been fun, and we're still working on that. We have a bunch of seedlings of feijoa from Brazil that we're testing and are eliminating the ones that aren't good. It's a big sort of pretty good sized breeding project, probably about 1,000 plus plants that we're testing. And then it's an interesting fruit, flowering quince, Japanese flowering quince, anomalies is somehow what it's called. It's like a quince in the fact that it's pretty firm and you can't just eat it off the plant, which is discouraging to some folks. But Japanese flowering quince is a shrub, not a tree. And the fruit is smaller, about baseball size, or maybe even smaller than that. But it has a wonderful flavor if you process it. So what...
Different than a typical quince?
It's different than a typical quince.
Yeah. Is it the same family?
Not really.
Okay.
No, I mean, it's a rosaceae, but it's not it's not related directly to quince like the common yellow quince. So what we learned about and one thing about traveling overseas is you get all sorts of ideas that, you know, you can do things differently. So they get probably ideas from us, we get them from them. Mm-hmm. And Korea has been one of the countries that we've spent a lot of time in. We have a good friend there who takes us around to things. And one of the things that we discovered was a factory where they were making syrup from this flowering quince. And so we've started doing it at home. So what I've done over the past couple of days is take the ripe fruit, which are ripe now. I cut them up into quarters. I take out the seeds, and then I chop them up a little smaller, and I fill a gallon jar with these cut up quince segments and sugar. And I do it by weight. So I weigh out the quince and I weigh out the sugar and I mix it all up together in a big bowl and put it in a gallon jar, put the gallon jar in the refrigerator. What happens is over time, the sugar pulls the juice out of the quince, out of the fruit, and makes a sweet syrup, which is just wonderful. It is so good. I can't even tell you how good it is. And you can take, and then what we do with that syrup is we put a little bit in a jar, in a glass, add some San Pellegrino mineral water or something, this carbonated mineral mm-hmm. water, and you've got like, I guess you call it an Italian soda or something, but it's just great. I mean,
well, what's the weight ratio? I mean, what's the ratio? Like when you make, 1-to-1 or
when you're making it in the, yeah, when you're making the syrup, yes, yeah, it's 1-to-1 weight. Okay. So we put the same amount of sugar by weight as we've put in as of the fruit into the jar,
which is not unusual when you're making syrups or jams. Sometimes yeah. jam is even.
I think
sugar.
There's a potential business here for somebody. I wish I had the time to do it because there's some other fruits that we've done this with too.
Well, this is just the flowering. Quince.
Flowering
what
quince.
About regular quince?
Well, I experimented with that this year. I have not done it before, so mm-hmm. I will be able to give you a report, possibly as early as next month, about how it works with regular quince.
So you leave it for several months?
It takes about a month, in my best recollection of this. And I'm going to have to go. This year I'm going to be paying a lot more attention to how long it does take to do it. We also did it with schisandra. Which is another wonderful fruit that we can grow here in the Northwest.
Schisandra?
Magnolia vine, another name for
okay,
it.
Okay, okay.
They do that in Korea as well. And I might have mentioned on a previous show about going to a schisandra festival in Korea last year in September. The Korean name is Omija. And if there's any Koreans listening who know that name, I like that name better than magnolia vine, Omija. Anyway, they have an Omija festival in Korea in September. And what they do at the festival, the growers of Omija bring these 2-gallon plastic jugs full of fruit and sugar, and they sell the fruit before it's made into syrup, and then you take it home and let it sit, and it turns into this just outrageous syrup.
Huh. Well, does it taste anything like quince jelly or, I mean, regular quince? I mean, jelly, if you've had that?
Yeah.
Because I've never had quince syrup, but I've had quince regular.
Yeah. Well, I would say it's there's maybe a bit of lemon to it, sweet lemon like flavor. Hard to describe, really. I will definitely bring some. We will taste syrup.
Oh, I like sweet.
Yeah, I know. And you know, when you mix it with the mineral water, it makes such a wonderfully tasty soda that it's not like, you know, Pepsi Cola or something. I mean, it's really good for you and tastes great and it's refreshing and I can't recommend it
enough.
And
what color are the flowering quince fruit?
They're kind of pale green or greenish yellow. They're not as bright yellow like a regular quince, but and there's some varieties we've grown for years. One called, I remember in particular, Victory is one. We brought that from Europe many, many years ago. But this is something I think has some potential. The main thing that's possibly, you know, negative about it is you have to process it. You can't just take it off the plant and eat it. But the syrup is so good.
All right. Same kind of with rhubarb.
Yeah, there's a lot of things like that. Yeah. I mean, even regular quince is pretty hard to eat straight off the plant. You know, but
unless you're John Saltbite,
and there's the, you know, those Russian ones that have sweeter fruit, but still,
yeah,
you know, not like an apple.
Well, before we run out of time, you mentioned that you had 3 experiments going. Did you talk about all of those?
Well, persimmon, feijoa, and
the
flowering quince.
All right,
and we could add regular quince as a fourth, but it's not as extensive a process.
You have that being processed right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll put that on our list for next month.
Yes.
So yeah. Maybe we'll talk about that and whatever chemical it was that...
The herbicide that we want to watch out for.
Yeah. Well, we have just less than 2 minutes left, but we do want to talk about the future, if there is one, of the Home Orchard Society. If you're a member of Home Orchard Society, you may have gotten a letter or two in the past several months with a request for more board members, with the possible consequence of the organization not being able to function without a full complement.
It's a very sad situation. The Home Orchard Society has been around for a lot of years.
76, I believe.
Yeah, it's 40 plus years, yeah. And founded by some really awesome people who wanted to share their knowledge and their experiences of growing fruit here in our region. And unfortunately, as with other things that have happened, those people have passed on. The organization expanded quite a lot. I think it probably got too big in a sense, because now that there's not so many people involved, it's hard to carry on the spring propagation fair. Is a very, very big event. The All About Fruit Show in the fall. Those are wonderful events and great for people to learn about growing fruit and to be able to propagate their own. And I can't talk enough about
that. Yeah, I've estimated that I've learned about 80% of what I know about fruit growing from the Home Orchard Society and the people that are related.
Right. Yeah.
We don't know that it's a done deal, but the request was for more volunteers essentially to be on the board.
Yeah, I'm afraid that it may be a done deal, but of course as I understand the ending date for the organization is the first of the year. So if there are some folks out there who are members and wanted to contact Joni Cooper, the president, I think that, or the organization, I think that would might possibly sway them a bit. I'd love to see an organization where, at least continue to function to some degree. I think it could do less in its doing and still be a very useful resource for everybody. So,
well, maybe we'll try to get more guests on the Dirtbag.
Yeah, that would be good.
All right. Well, that's it for November. So we hope so. Yeah. Well, it's been great to be in person. To record a show. We've done other live recordings, but we've been at our respective computers. And Joe has great software that allows us to do it, fortunately, but there's nothing like the real McCoy in person. Mm-hmm. So, Joe, thank you very much. Joe had a brush with death. I say this somewhat flippantly, but it's true. Within the last week, we had to postpone our recording because he needed emergency care so he could breathe.
It wasn't a virus, it was a
right, it's kind of unknown at this point, some kind of allergy or allergen maybe that triggered it, but we're very happy that
Joe
recovered
here.
Quickly.
Yeah.
I don't know whatever they did there, use the Bic pen through this emergency tracheotomy. I don't think they need to do that, but he said in an email that the doc said if he was a half an hour later he may have suffocated because of anaphylactic shock, anaphylaxis. Epinephrine, that's what they gave him, right? Yeah. EpiPens.
Yeah, so all of you out there, be careful. There's things can happen. And worst, of course, is the virus, but then something like this, which you never even expect.
Hopefully we'll give you an update next month after he gets all the tests, just to find out, so. One more thing here. I forgot to say, we'll go out with our last tune here, summing up our last week of political events. An instrumental from Ronnie Earl and the Broadcasters. This is just called Happy. Jim, thank you. Joe, thank you. This is Glenn Andreessen. I'm sure we'll be back next month. Thanks for listening. Be well.
listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.